Who is it that we follow, that we pattern our lives after in full? We had parents, grandparents, guardians, teachers, bosses who have made a profound impact on our lives, and intentionally or unintentionally, we have incorporated some aspect or aspects of those into our daily habits, the things we say, the things that we do. So it begs of us a question: what is it that we're taking in? Who is it that we trust? Think about that a bit. What are we reading, watching, listening to? And who is it that is having an impact on us, no matter our age, right now? Our readings are, to use a colloquialism that I've heard, trying to put some wisdom on us. And we begin with the book of Sirach. This book is aimed at the right crowd, to the mature, to those who have experienced life, all its wonders, all its hardships. And it tells us that a person's speech will reveal their character, that when hardship and stress inevitably come, how that person reacts is how that person really is. When the sieve is shaken or removed, it reveals some nastiness sometimes. Think of pulling a Band-Aid off of a fresh wound. Not a pretty sight. And Jesus in the gospel, against the backdrop of all that he said in the Sermon on the Plain that we heard last week, love one another, pray for your enemies, do good to all, expecting nothing in return. He gives us four parables to try and illustrate this. In the first, he warns of following false teachers, the blind leading the blind. Right now, there are no shortage of opinions on any range of topics out there. The difference is the mass promulgation of these ideas. There has never been a time when each of us didn't express ourselves and our thoughts on any number of subjects. The difference was they went out to the group that we were with, then they largely disappeared, vanished. Now we have Twitter and Facebook, Instagram, thousands of TV channels, podcasts, and we have permanence. What gets sent out into the world no longer vanishes, it is kept there on a cache for all to see or hear for years and years. And when our minds are changed, those words, which once vanished into thin air once upon a time, are left there for others to ridicule and cry hypocrisy. These are tough standards to live up to these days, particularly if we're not versed in the subject that we happen to be opining over. That's never happened with me. Jesus knew this very well, so he teaches us to examine our own consciences before we start correcting anybody else about their words or their actions. Last week, Jesus told us to stop judging lest we be judged. Basically, you and I are being called to keep our side of the street clean before we criticize our neighbor for what we perceive as their faults. Maybe our view isn't as clear as we think it is. Lastly, Jesus asks us to discern what it is that we are feeding ourselves with. What are we reading, watching, and listening to? By its fruits. Does what is out there bear good fruit? Does it bring peace, or does it sow more disharmony and disunity, more angst? As we mentioned last week, most, not all, but most of what is out there for us to consume is loud. It inspires anger, inspires division. It asks us to pick a side. Don't dare read into anything else, or else you're a traitor. And this is not limited to politics, folks. This is true of anything. All or nothing, this side or that. It seeks to reduce nuance to black and white, to limit mature discussion, to limit listening. That is the fruit of the times in which we live. So what is the antidote? The gospel, of course. If Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, then there can be no other place in which to turn. And you and I are asked to project this way, this truth, this life into the world. That means that we have to live in and consume what it offers and show the alternative. And it's not only in the scriptures, although that's the best place to start, it's in our pastoral letters. And we don't have to look far for a good one. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the pastoral letter, This Land is Home to Me, and the 30th anniversary of its follow-up, At Home in the Web of Life. These two letters, issued by the bishops of the states in which Appalachia is inhabited, speak to the economic and social conditions of her people in this, the technological age. Even what was written 50 years ago and 30 years ago apply very well to our time. How quickly the world is changing. How what has been our economic sustenance in the past will not be available in present and future times. How taking care of our land is essential. And with every section, with every guidance, the words of Christ are its North Star. And for all the celebration of these letters, the renewal of our great social justice institutions that serve the poor so capably, both in our state and beyond, Catholic Charities, Catholic Appalachian Society, the list goes on and on. There's one passage that reminds, as St. Paul so bluntly does today, that without Christ in the corner and in the center, that without our own purification, our efforts will be without lasting fruit. St. Paul tells us in our second reading that we, the corruptible, put on and live in the grace of Jesus Christ, his incorruptibility. We can be steadfast in the work that we do for his kingdom, that this work will not be in vain. The work to heal a world in perpetual turmoil will not be completed while any of us is here on earth. But real healing cannot begin until we are individually and as a community united to Jesus Christ and his grace. These pastoral letters are structured in a way that offers solutions. Those sections are called a path forward. That's how they word it. But they always begin with the absolute necessity of acknowledging that it is our sinfulness which is the root of all the evils in the world. It isn't enough then or now for us to play director and point out the foibles of men, women, institutions, those things that surround us. But to participate fruitfully, it has to begin with reconciling ourselves to God, to amend our personal ways, to ask Jesus to remove the wooden beam from our eyes. Then, having done that, to examine what it is that we are consuming. With what are we forming our conscience? We want to be informed. We want to relax and enjoy something that makes us laugh or it entertains us. But where is that line when it leads to sin, or leads to discontent or resentment, or leads us down a false path of belief? As you and I begin Lent on Wednesday, we are being invited to ask ourselves, what is it, who is it, that we really follow? Jesus Christ and his gospel never disappoint, but it often challenges us. May you and I not fear this challenge, fear the examination, fear the letting go of those comfort items that we cling to. If we take his call to purification, to anticipation of the glory that he offers us, if we allow Jesus to become our comfort, his work through us can bear fruit that will last.